If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Then be a citizen, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everyone. Happy to see you here on Monday morning. Now, yesterday we had a big, kind of a shattering news story of four police officers killed in a coffee shop just outside of Seattle from, Kingston, I believe. It's a small town, Lakewood. It's a small town that's only been in existence for about 15, 16, 17 years. And they've had their own police department for only 5 years. And all five of these officers who were killed were all there from the inception for 5 years. Now, as it looks, these four officers, there was a sergeant and three officers that were getting together in the morning before they went out on patrol. So they go to this little coffee shop. The little coffee shop just so happens to be owned by a retired cop. So they're sitting there, you know, getting their stuff together. It, basically like morning briefing, but instead of at the police station, they're doing it at a coffee shop. In my opinion, not really the best way to do it. You always have to worry about officer safety. This is a bit of a lapse in officer safety. But whatever the reason may be, I don't know if they didn't have a briefing room. Maybe they did. Maybe this is just a thing. Hey, let's go have coffee and you know, kind of tighten up as a good, solid squad, a good group, good camaraderie sort of thing, which is, in that light, it's a very good idea. Sergeant takes his troops out, they sit there, he and his officers, or she and her officers, I don't know which one was the sergeant, they get together and they plan out how they're going to do things that day. Well, some guy, and right now they have a suspect. As a matter of fact, they have a suspect in Seattle, cornered right now, trying to find out if the guy's even alive. Maurice Clemens, 37-year-old black male, is the suspect involved in this. Right now, Seattle police, this is about 30 miles from the actual crime scene, so this is in Seattle, negotiators have been trying to communicate with this Maurice Clemens, who is the suspect in the shooting, using loudspeakers, explosions. They even sent in a little robot to try to prod him out from hiding. At one point in time, there were some gunshots that rang out through the neighborhood. However, we're not exactly sure what that total story is. One of the spokesmen there from Pierce County Sheriff's Department, that's who actually has him. So I guess it's not in Seattle. It's just the reports coming out of Seattle. Seattle's in King County. This is coming from Pierce County. We have determined that in effect, he has been shot, said Ed Troyer, a spokesman for Pierce County Sheriff. He may be deceased from his gunshot wound, but they don't know. They simply don't know. Right now, they're trying to get all this determined. We may know by the end of this radio show. I will keep checking and see what's going on. This guy Clemens, who is the suspect, has a long criminal history, including a long prison sentence commuted by former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee nearly 10 years ago. And he became a prime target Sunday in the search for the killer of the Lakewood Police Sergeant Mark Rennington and three officers. So we're going to follow this story a little bit throughout the show. Stay tuned. More to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, back on. We're following the story of the police who were ambushed in, just outside of Seattle yesterday and cost four officers their lives. As it sounds, these four officers, a sergeant and three officers, are sitting around a table in the morning doing some sort of morning briefing. In the initial report, it says they are catching up on morning paperwork, because there is no morning paperwork to have to catch up on. They were doing some form of briefing, I would imagine. When a suspect goes in there, and at this point in time, the suspect is a fella by the name of Maurice Clemens, and he's done some time, and he did some time in Arkansas, evidently walks in to the coffee shop, shoots two of these cops as they're sitting right there, shoots another one as the other two stand up, and then the fourth cop, we're not sure which one this is at this point, actually takes a round and gets into a struggle with the suspect, and the witnesses believe that the suspect may have caught a round then. That officer died during that struggle, or at least went down and was not able to fight anymore, and the suspect got away. The police now have the guy surrounded. They have for several hours now. They've had this guy surrounded for 5 or 6 hours at least. And they believe that the guy might be dead. Now, this is not the first time that a Seattle cop has been ambushed. They had one that happened Halloween night, and the cop died, I think, 3 or 4 days later. That suspect is still in the hospital, however, in stable condition. So they have that guy. I think they found him a few days afterwards after doing some investigation, which is, you know, kudos to them. Very good job. Seattle is no stranger to violence against police. There were many ambushes and many cops hurt and killed in the 60s and 70s during the very nice hippie era. Also way back in the 30s during the Great Depression, there were a lot of police officers that were ambushed back in the day. Now, I'm from the Seattle area. I was born in Seattle, and I was raised in a small little town that's a suburb of Seattle called Edmonds. And I lived there until I was 10 years old before moving down here to southern Nevada, where I was essentially raised in Las Vegas. But, of course, I remember my childhood. Heck, I remember actually spending time in my crib. I remember being less than a year old. I remember the house that we lived in when I was born. I remember the area. I've been back just a couple of times. And the last time I was back there was probably, I don't know, 10 years ago? 9.5 years? About 9.5 years ago was the last time I was back. However, I went back to my hometown, to Edmonds, and was able to drive around and go anywhere that I wanted to, simply by recollection from when I was a little kid. And I was probably, 30, 31 at the time. Anyhow, this sort of violence against police officers, I actually remember some of these things from in the 70s. One of my dad's very good friends was a Seattle cop. He was a canine officer. And this guy was a real badass. He was, he took my dad on a couple of ride-alongs. And this is really back when police ruled the streets. And you didn't talk back because you'd get smacked and locked up. And this guy, since he was a canine officer, he was happy to turn his dog loose on you. This dog was a badass. His name was Hansel. And Hansel was they kept the dog that had this huge backyard. You know, everybody in Washington has a large backyard, lots of growth, bunch of trees, grass all over the place. I mean, it's very green and vegetative. And I say that because a lot of big cities don't have that. So in Edmonds, this is what we had. And he had this dog in the back in its own pen, and this pen was huge. It had to be probably 15 feet wide, 10 or 15 feet wide by probably 20 feet, 30 feet deep. It was a huge pen. Had the dog's toys and, you know, had a doghouse and everything in there. This dog scared the living hell out of me. A couple of times, while getting the dog from the cage through the house into his car to take to work, a couple of times this dog bolted when he was supposed to be sitting and staying and obeying commands during, you know, sort of some sort of, I guess, training trial. And twice this dog bit neighbors. He was an aggressive dog. So this particular cop, Mike Gregg, I think was his name. He'd let it loose. And all of that basically in response because cops had to be watching over their backs because they knew that they were getting ambushed, they were getting shot at. It wasn't lone just of the Seattle area, but it was pretty common at the time. So it looks as though something like this might be back during difficult times in society. The Great Depression, and then we had all this anti-war movement and the nation divided in the late 60s and up into the mid-70s. It would seem as though there might be some societal thing when it comes to these people going nuts and shooting at cops. Now, this particular guy, Clemens, who was the suspect in shooting these four officers, might not have anything other than a grudge against cops. I mean, the guy's picture that they're showing is a mugshot photo. The guy's in his orange jumpsuit. He probably is not a big fan of cops, having been locked up quite a while, which always just baffles me. It baffles me that people that are convicts of a crime, they do their time and they hate cops. It's like, wow, you're not in prison because of the cops. You're in prison because you broke the law. You didn't have enough self-control to keep from breaking the law, or you just decided, hell, that's what I want to do. If you're going to do the crime, you have to be prepared to do the time. That's what they've said for years. But yet these guys hate the cops. It's like, okay, well now, wait a minute. If, first of all, you have your victims. Do you hate your victims? Then you have your cops. The cops that actually do the investigation and lock you up. Okay. So love the cops, hate the cops. Which one do you do? Then you have the prosecutors. Love them, hate them. What do? You got the judge. You got the jury. If it actually goes to jury, if you don't take a plea deal. Then you've got the jailers. Do you hate absolutely everyone involved? Do you have a grudge against absolutely everyone involved? Well, if you did the crime, idiotic moron, do the time. That's really all I have to say about it. Don't go hating people that caught you and prosecuted you. Otherwise, this would be a lawless society. We don't have a lawless society. And if you then carry a grudge against the people who basically took you into custody and got you all the way into prison and you did your time from there, don't go hating on them. You're the idiot who broke the law. Okay? End of story. Unless, of course, you truly are innocent. And I'm not talking the typical prison innocent that, hey, man, the cop screwed me, that's why I'm in here. No. You did something wrong. And you might be ticked because, based on a technicality, you think you shouldn't be there, but you did something wrong to perpetrate this entire event. As opposed to people who truly are in prison, who truly did not commit a crime. Of which there are some, however that percentage is few. It's pretty small. So, I don't know what this guy's hang-up was. We may find out, we may never know. If he's dead, it's going to have to come out from people that this guy associated with. Maybe family, maybe friends. If he did it and he's alive, maybe he'll tell you. We don't know. As of right now, they think he might be dead because they've heard absolutely nothing from the guy. Therefore, he might also have earplugs in his ears and he's falling asleep. But they're pretty sure the guy is shot and has been shot at least once, if not a couple of times. And they believe he may have succumbed to any injuries. So, we'll see. I'm sure we'll know very shortly. Again, possibly by the end of this broadcast, we might know. By the way, I'd like to thank RJ Hinder again for a good show today. And I want to welcome his audience to Two-Way Radio. The numbers on a lot of the shows around RBN have been climbing because people are sticking around for more and more of RBN, more and more hosts, more and more shows that are coming out. So I really appreciate that, and I'd like to invite my audience, once this broadcast is over, to stick around for the Global Research Hour, followed by Ernest Hancock, both good shows. So stick around for those. Back to Seattle. There is a really odd dynamic in Seattle. Washington traditionally has some very conservative people. It's similar to California. There are some very conservative-minded people. all up and down the West Coast, or as we call it now, the Left Coast. In Oregon, it's basically everybody east of the Cascades. In California, it's the majority of the people who are not on the coast. There are some conservatives there. We're talking, you know, highly Republican, highly red, highly conservative areas. And in Washington, it's scattered throughout. Seattle is rather unique. Seattle has always had its, well, list of loonies. I mean, look at Mayor Greg Nickels on his way out the door. Does some sort of executive order saying, you know, we're not going to pass a law. It's just going to be my rule. You can't carry guns in these areas. Which is, you know, that's just kooky. This is a type of guy that just breeds the sort of just goofy anti-societal thought that leads people to believe that they can go do things like shoot cops. Now, I'm a big fan of honest, law-abiding cops that do their job well. The problem is, I haven't seen a whole bunch of those. But at no time does anybody on any job deserve to have somebody walk in and just blast them. So, my thoughts and prayers and hopes go out to the families of these victims. This is ridiculous. Stay tuned, guys. There's more to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
So last Friday, we were talking about a story about hijackings off the coast of Somalia out in the Eastern African seas. And another ship headed for the U.S. has been hijacked. This is a Greece-flagged, flagged out of the nation of Greece, super tanker carrying crude oil from Saudi Arabia to the United States. And Somali pirates seized this tanker. Sometime over the weekend, the news came out early today, and it would seem as though the increasingly dangerous waters off East Africa have now turned to this attack, which could pose a pretty big environmental impact if they were to do anything with the contents of the ship. So this particular ship called the Maran Centaurus was hijacked yesterday, about 800 miles off the coast, according to an EU Naval Forces spokesman, Commander John Harbour. Kind of an interesting last name for a Navy guy. Harbour, great. Harbour said it originated from Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, and was destined for the U.S. The ship, it's a huge, huge ship, has 28 crew members on it, and evidently no security. The shipping intelligence company, Lloyd's List, said the Maran Centaurus is a very large crude carrier with a capacity of over 300,000 tons. And officials could not immediately say how many barrels of oil were on board, but its value would be in the millions, probably hundreds of millions of dollars. Pirates have increased attacks on vessels off East Africa for millions that they can get in ransom that can be had from those. Though pirates have successfully hijacked dozens of vessels over the last several years, Sunday's attack appears to be only the second ever on an oil tanker. Now, the hijacking of a tanker increases worries that the vessel could crash, be run aground, or be involved in a firefight. So those are some of the worries that are coming out. Pirates typically use guns and rocket-propelled grenades in their attacks, and some vessels now carry private security guards, but this oil tanker did not. Oil tankers do not. Seems like a really dumb move for me. They say you're sitting on a huge ship filled with flammable liquids. You don't want somebody with a gun on top of that. He said financially it's very costly exercise because the value of oil is so volatile. if it's held for a long time and the price of oil drops, it could cost him millions of dollars. Now, in November of 08, just last year, pirates hijacked the Saudi supertanker Sirius Star, which held 2 million barrels of oil, valued at about $100 million. The tanker was released in January for a reported $3 million ransom after a two-month drama that helped galvanize the international efforts to fight the piracy off of Africa's eastern coast. So, it seems that, first of all, crude oil is not easy to light. It's not flammable like gasoline. As a matter of fact, you can take a cigarette. I've seen cigarettes extinguished in motor oil. It takes a lot of hot heat. It's nobody with a gun. Certainly, if you get a rocket-propelled grenade and the grenade goes in, first of all, you got to get through what is now a double hull. Every oil tanker floating across the world now, I believe, has to be double-hulled. If not, the vast majority of them are. And the rest will be, or they're not going to be allowed to sail. I believe that date may have already passed. I think it may have been the first of this year that had to be that way. Thanks in large part to the Exxon Valdez and their sorry affair. So now we've got 300,000 pounds worth of oil, whatever that is. Is that what they said? 300,000 tons, pardon me, of oil that's sitting there in pirate hands. Now, $3 million for $100 million worth of oil wasn't really that big a deal. I'm sure they were, reasonably okay to pay it. The thing is, how long are we going to allow this to happen? This is really like a bunch of sorry little children getting out of hand, and we're not doing anything about it. So how do we handle piracy? First of all, it's a good idea to have these ships armed. We talked about this American ship that got hijacked early this year, and they tried again just a few weeks ago and a couple of weeks ago, and now they had armed security on the ship, and they repelled the pirates. Now, many of you may have seen these funny little emails that go along, and it's a cruise ship, and the cruise ship is heavily armed, and as part of the cruise, you can pick different package deals of different type of guns that you can shoot, and off pirates off the Somali coast. Now, that's kind of funny and cute, and it looks funny, but the thing is, we need to get armed ships out there and basically start blowing these people out of the water. Once piracy turns into the world's most deadly profession, I have a feeling that a lot of these people are going to choose to do something else. We're talking about a violent society that has had no centralized government for nearly 20 years. I think it's been 18 years since there's been a good, recognized centralized government in Somalia. It's been a lawless society. Their recognized central government today encompasses just a few blocks of the city. More of a mayor or a civic organizer than a national government. Anyhow, those are my thoughts. We need to take these guys out and do it quickly. Stay tuned. More to come.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Control, loved by dictators since 1917. The two-way radio show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back. So, I get an email from a friend of mine this morning asking me about practicing these malfunction clearances with his handgun. We're going to talk a little bit about malfunctions and guns right now. First of all, there's a difference between a malfunction and a jam. Some people generically put the two together as they would put together a magazine and a clip. Magazines and clips are two completely different items that serve a similar function but do it in very different manners. So if you've put rounds into an enclosed device that has a spring in it, that's a magazine. That's like what you would put into the average handgun or into most magazines, I'm sorry, most guns from the bottom, like an AR-15 as a magazine. A clip, on the other hand, simply retains the back belted edge of a cartridge. And it's usually made of some sort of a sprung steel that literally clips onto the back of the round. The rest of the round is exposed. A clip holds a round simply by the back end, back where the primer is and where you've got the recess in the area. Sometimes you have that recess in the area. It's, I don't know, maybe about an eighth of an inch thick. And then you've got a little recessed area, and then the primer is in there, and then forward of that recessed area, you've got the remainder of the casing, which would hold the powder. You've got the bullets heated in there. If it holds just the back end of that through some form of sprung steel, like what you would find for an M1 Garand, that is a clip. Again, if you put it into a housing that fully encloses the round and there's a spring in it, that is a magazine. So people generically throw the clip around when that's not what it is. If you're talking about a clip is a clip. If you're talking about a magazine, a magazine's a magazine. And I'm not talking about the type of magazine that you sit there and thumb through and read stories. I'm talking about a magazine of ammunition. There are differences, so proper terminology will let you know what you're talking about. If you use the incorrect terminology, those of us who know the proper terminology look at you like you're a complete freaking idiot because we're trying to follow along with what a clip is and you're describing a magazine. It's like, must you use some gangbanger term? I mean, it's really the lowlights of society who started calling magazine clips because of the lazy form of articulation to use the least number of syllables or the incorrect terminology with less syllables to make it work. So, jams and malfunctions. Jam, one syllable. Malfunction, three syllables. People call malfunctions jams so they can speak less words or less syllables as it may be. A jam means a gun that is essentially locked up. You can't get it to work. If a gun is locked up and not working, it's jammed. You need to probably have some tools, maybe even a gunsmith look at the thing to get it working. A malfunction, on the other hand, is described as a temporary stoppage. And a temporary stoppage that can be cleared reflexively, no tools, no gunsmith, that's a malfunction. And malfunctions are broken into three parts. And to keep them easy, they're referred to as a type 1, a type 2, and a type 3. Now, a type 1 malfunction is described as a failure to fire. That means that you pressed and the gun went click when you expected it to go bang. Now, if you're actually in a firefight and your gun goes click instead of bang, you will notice it. So, why does it go click instead of bang? Well, there's one of three possibilities. Either the primer is dead. You know, you get the hammer or the striker that comes through, hits the primer lights a spark, spark goes forward, ignites the powder, builds up gases, and those gases launch the bullet down the barrel, out and down range towards your target. Or towards where the barrel was pointed. Now, if that primer is dead, it doesn't spark and ignite the powder inside of the casing. So that could be one reason why the gun goes click instead of bang. Another reason might be that there's an empty casing in the chamber. Now, that's more likely a revolver scenario where you have 5 or 6 shots, 7, 8, 9 shots, depending on some of these newer ones. You're shooting and you get click instead of bang. In a revolver, that could be because you already fired that round and it comes right back around to the 12 o'clock position, up high, already been fired, you get a click. You have a spent casing in there. And then the other one is that there is nothing in the chamber. Perhaps you've got a magazine-fed weapon and something blocks up the spring or that top round to where the slide comes back and doesn't pick up the new one. So there's an empty chamber. So there is a there's a symptom that is part of this whole malfunction clearing process. For a type 1, the symptom is the gun goes click instead of bang. That tells you that the gun itself worked. However, the ammunition did not. So what you want to do is you want to clear this thing. And the way to clear this type 1 malfunction is to tap the bottom of the magazine. That's another reason why you might not have a round going into the chamber, is the magazine isn't fully seated. Okay, let's say that you do some shooting. You do a tactical reload. By that means that the magazine that's in the gun is partially depleted, but not completely empty. You take it out, retain it somewhere in a pocket or on a pouch, insert a new magazine. Then, if you didn't seat it properly, it might be sitting in there, but not fully in there. So you get bang from the one in the chamber, followed by click, because the magazine wasn't seated high enough for the slide to pick up a new round off of that magazine as it comes forward. So the proper way to clear a type 1 malfunction is with your support hand to tap the bottom of the magazine, not too hard, but aggressively enough to make sure it's seated. Then reach over the top of the slide where the grasping grooves are behind the ejection port and rack the slide to the rear. And oftentimes it wouldn't hurt if you flip the gun a little bit to the right so the ejection port starts moving towards the ground as well. Get a little centrifugal force, maybe some gravity helping shoot anything out of there. Like, say, a dead round or an empty casing out of the chamber onto the ground as it picks up a new round. Now, oftentimes, people will do what's called tap, rack, bang, where they tap the magazine, rack the action, press off a shot. Do not tap, rack, bang. Do not finish with bang at the end of any malfunction clearance. In all likelihood, that's what you're going to need to do, but not necessarily so. Chuck Taylor tells a story of a detective in Southern California who had a long, drawn-out gun battle in a hallway of an apartment complex. And this officer ended up with an emergency reload where the slide was locked back on an empty magazine. He had been taught, strip the magazine out, put a new one in, finish it with a tap, then rack the slide, and then bang. That's what he'd been taught. So he did this. He put it in, finished with the tap, racked the slide, began to press off another shot as he pointed back in downrange, and realized that an innocent bystander stepped out into the hallway to see what all this racket and commotion was, this gunfire. Well, now this innocent bystander is in the sights of the cop's gun. Well, this cop recognized it, and he's telling himself mentally, stop, don't shoot, don't shoot. However, he had practiced this sort of exercise with this tap, rack, bang affair so many times that his finger had already been programmed subconsciously to press. And that's what he did. He pressed the trigger, fired around, and he killed the innocent bystander. And that was a training issue. So be prepared to shoot, because when are you going to get a malfunction? While you're shooting. Why are you shooting on the street? Because you're in a gunfight for your life. So if you get a malfunction, you're probably going to need to shoot. But, based on the story I just told you, it might not be that way. So, you get a click instead of a bang. It's the ammunition. Gun's fine. Tap the magazine, rack the action, give it a little flip to the side if you like. Get a new round into that chamber. Then, assess. Get your finger on the trigger, get ready to shoot. Assess whether or not you need to actually fire. For a revolver, if you press and you get a click, that could be a dead round. Press again. If you get a second click, you're going to open up the cylinder, dump those casings onto the ground, grab your speed loader, throw in new rounds, close up that cylinder, make sure it turns to a lock, point back in, and get ready to shoot. You may not have to, but you may. Okay? So again, with the revolvers, you're firing, you get click. That might just be a dead round. Press, you might get a bang. Okay, I used to get type 1s with a friend of mine's .357 that I would borrow and take out practicing. It wasn't the ammunition. If you looked at it, it was a Smith & Wesson .357 Magnum. Beautiful gun. And the problem with it was that the hammer wasn't exactly even when it would go forward and strike. It was an exposed hammer with an exposed firing pin. And if you looked at the face of the hammer, where the side of the firing pin was, you could see where the left side was worn, but the right side was not. So this pin was not going in straight and flush. So the option was to take it and have a guy put it in properly, which I showed it to a guy, and the guy said, no, it's in there properly. This hammer was cut improperly. So how did we fix it? We filed down the face so it was even on both sides. Never again a malfunction with this gun. So this was actually an issue with the gun itself. So you might have been bang, bang, click. Well, you know, you're not going to be counting rounds in a gunfight. So don't count rounds when you practice. That's just dumb. Just realize when you're done, you need to top off this gun. Get into doing some tactical reloads. All of this, by the way, is stuff that you're going to learn at the 2A Radio handgun course, which will be coming up in March. Again, dates are forthcoming. I'm working with the range. I hope to have answers this week from the range. So that's upcoming. Keep your calendars open. So once now we're going to move on to what is a Type 2. A Type 2 is described as a failure to eject. That means that the casing is extracted out of the chamber, but it gets locked up into the slide, and you end up with brass poking out high. A lot of people refer to this as a stovepipe malfunction. The empty casing extracted, but it didn't fully eject. There's any number of things that could cause it to keep from ejecting. One of them that I have experienced is your spring is too light, and the slide's working so fast that it extracts back. The casing hits the ejector, but it slams forward so fast that it gets caught up. Other times is that your spring is way too heavy, and it extracts back, but not far enough to hit the ejector and fully eject the casing clear of the slide. There is no equivalent and with a Type 2 malfunction with a revolver, which is the beauty of it. So from here, you have brass hide. The thing is, now when you press, you end up getting a dead trigger. Now, that's what's unique. A Type 1, a failure to fire, has a click. The other malfunctions that you'll get will have a dead trigger. So what you need to do then is that's a symptom that something's wrong with the gun. You need to look and see what it is. So just tilt the muzzle up a little bit. Don't drop your head down away from the firefight. Look and see what you got. If you've got a Type 2 with the brass sitting high, you fix it the same as the Type 1. You will tap and then do a rack and a flip. This is where the flip actually helps out to really get that spent casing moving. Just centrifugal force will get the thing going. So tap rack, give it a little flip, and then you point right back in. Now, some people go forward of that casing and sweep it back. Bad deal. Don't do that. First of all, it can cut up your hand. Second of all, it can push that casing back down. And third of all, you can get that casing out of the way, but not the slide hasn't come back far enough to pick up the new round off the magazine. So you might go from a Type 2 straight into a Type 1 because there's nothing in the chamber. So simply tap the magazine, reach over the top behind the ejection port where the grasping grooves are on the slide, and rack it back. Give it a little flip. Give it a little flip to the right where the ejection port's heading towards the ground. Get that casing out of the way, then point back in, be ready to shoot. Look through your sights. Somebody needs to be shot, get back on your front sight and start shooting them. If not, don't. Get the gun back out of your face, get your finger off the trigger, and look around. Assess your situation. Now, a Type 3 malfunction is a failure to extract. That leaves an empty casing in the chamber. Something's wrong. Either that round had really weak brass on the back end and the extractor didn't get it, or the extractor, maybe it's dirty and it wasn't able to get into where it needed to be. The spring is all crunched up with gunk and dirt. Or maybe the extractor, the tooth on the extractor ripped. Something is wrong. So you end up now with the magazine bringing a new round in up and heading nose into the back of the spent casing that's in the chamber. Well, now you got a problem. Okay, this is the mother of all malfunctions. This one takes some time and effort. So from here, the best way to do this thing is strip the magazine out of the gun, run the action a good three times, And I'm talking pull it back and push it forward. Don't just let go and let it slingshot forward. Try to force the extractor over the casing. Insert a new magazine, run the action, and point back in. Okay? If you have a gun that is too hard to just strip the magazine out, then you have to lock the slide to the rear first, then strip the magazine out. Okay? What you can also do is you can reuse this magazine. Some people falsely believe that magazines can cause a Type 3. I have never in my life, my professional life, ever seen a Type 3 caused by a handgun magazine. There are some Type 3 versions with a rifle magazine that can happen, but not with a handgun magazine. So you can strip it out, retain it in your shooting hand between your ring and little finger, or underneath your armpit on your shooting arm, then rack the action three times, reinsert that same magazine, and run the action. I don't carry a bunch of spare magazines when I'm on the street. Oftentimes, it's just the one in the gun, so I'm not going to be throwing that magazine to the ground. Then you reassess. So that's really your Type 1, Type 2, and Type 3 malfunction and clearances. So just understand how those things work and how you need to clear them. All of it is going to be done at the 2A Radio Handgun Course. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on, we'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
Okay, so we're back on the latest coming out of Seattle with this. They have a suspect cornered in the ambush, execution-style murder of four police officers at a coffee shop yesterday. And they're continuing to search for the suspect. They believe they've got him surrounded in a house, and he's wanted in the ambush execution of these four officers from yesterday. And questions are swirling as to how and why this guy, Maurice Clemens, an ex-con, at one time faced more than 100 years behind bars. However, now he's out, and is the prime suspect in killing four cops yesterday. So the question is now, how was he allowed to live freely? All of this, I'm sure, is going to come out in the next few days. Clemens, 37, who's been residing in Tacoma, a suburb of Seattle. You have SeaTac Airport, which is Seattle-Tacoma Airport. large city. I actually lived there for a couple of months before I moved down to Las Vegas when I was a kid. He has an extensive violent criminal history, marked by volatile and unstable behavior, according to his records available through court. His criminal history includes at least 5 felony convictions in Arkansas and at least 8 felony charges in Washington, and this is according to the Seattle Times. He had a lengthy prison sentence commuted in 2000 by former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, who cited Clemens' youth at the time. However, his youth, he was 30 years old and had committed numerous felonies. Rhonda Sharpe, who is a spokeswoman for the Arkansas Parole Board, said then-Governor Huckabee commuted Clemens' 108-year prison term to a sentence of 47 years, 5 months, and 19 days. Of course, he got out on parole. So that made him eligible for parole at that time. He later violated his parole and was returned to prison until released in 2004. So, they say, should he be found to be responsible for this horrible tragedy in Seattle, it will be the result of a series of failures in the criminal justice system in both Arkansas and Washington State. And that was according to Huckabee in a statement issued yesterday. Former governor ran for president in 2008 and has been a leading contender in polls for the 2012 Republican nomination. And he currently hosts a show on Fox News Channel and calls to his office on Monday, yet have to be returned. However, it's still pretty early. It's just now 8 o'clock on the West Coast. So that's who we're looking at as the potential killer in the state of Washington and Lakewood with four dead police officers from yesterday. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Global Research Hour next, and you can always email me, bill@2aradio.com.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will Your Freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.